Hello, everyone. Welcome back to our podcast, the Bar Curious Podcast. My name is Mike Stojic, and with me, as always, is Joseph Barber.
That's me.
There he is. Hey, Joey.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing? how you doing?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing all right today.
You been to any bars in Peru lately?
Lately, it's almost as if you knew. Why, yes.
Curious. Not like lately, as in post COVID. I mean, you've been in any lately as pre COVID. You've been in any?
Yes, very early this year.
Been to any Peruvian bars in the pre-COVID era? I think that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. People are going to be like, the pre-COVID era. You know, instead of BCE and BC and all that, you know, all that nonsense.
Pre-COVID?
It's going to be the pre-COVID PC. Era. Yeah, the PCE, pre-COVID. So, all right, here we go again.
We're going to start
over. Hey, Joey, been to any bars in Peru in the PCE?
Sounds so stupid.
Era? Pre-COVID era.
Sound wasted. All right, we should edit that out.
No, it's great. Go ahead.
Do you like that?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
All right, so anyway, obviously today's episode is about Pisco.
So there I was, sitting in a bar in Peru.
Yeah, let's go ahead and let you know today is Pisco Day. But yeah, so Pisco is the... Well, I guess official. Yeah, official. I can't hear myself anymore. There we go. Is the spirit of Peru and Chile. But these two countries are essentially at war with each other on who founded Pisco.
Right.
And bringing up me going to a bar in Peru is funny you should mention that. It's
funny you should ask.
As if you didn't even know. So earlier this year, my wife and I went to Peru. I was actually my wife went and I tagged along. So she had a work trip and I was able to go. And it was pretty cool. So one of the things that we did on the last night that I was there is we went to this Pisco bar. It's a really, really awesome bar in Lima. If you are ever in Lima, Peru, it's called Museo de Pisco, which is essentially like Museum of Pisco. They had a ton of Pisco in there. And not one Chilean Pisco. But anyway, to get back to that, I was kind of doing this tasting with the bartender, and I was, he asked me what I wanted, and I was pretty much like, just give me an array of Piscos that you guys have around here. I just want to see differences and what you like, and I just kind of want to try everything. So as we're tasting these Piscos, I mean, they're completely different. I mean, just... There's some that are super smooth, some that have this bite to it, some that are, kind of grassy. It was kind of insane the amount of flavors you got from it. But as we're tasting, I asked this bartender, who is very knowledgeable. I said, so I've heard that Pisco either came from Chile or Peru. Like, what are your thoughts on it, essentially? And he almost stopped me in my tracks and just said, no. I mean, just like gave it to me. No, Pisco is Peruvian, and essentially was like, screw those Chileans. this is not a Chilean product. This is a Peruvian product. So
I imagine this is how I'm going to play the story in my head. I know it's not how you're telling the story, but here's how I play it. There's Joey sitting at the bar. he asked the bartender, so I understand Pisco is Peruvian and Chile.
Peruvian bartender.
Peruvian, yeah. I hear it's from Peru and Chile. And then halfway through Chile, the word Chile, he pulls a glove out of his back pocket and slaps you with it. How dare you?
That is essentially what happened. Yeah. About halfway through Chile, his eyes got really big. And it was like, no. I was like, well. Damn, okay, sorry.
You practically insulted him, his father, and everyone before, his mother, everyone else.
I might as well have told his grandfather that Pisco meant nothing. Yeah, it was insane. But anyway, it was a really cool experience. I learned a lot about Pisco in Peru and got to try a bunch of things. But I guess this episode is going into what is Pisco?
Yeah.
Why does Peru think it's their spirit? Why does Chile think it's their spirit? Yeah, and just kind of talking about some history.
You told me that story Got me curious.
Bar curious?
Got me bar curious.
That's actually, that story is actually, Mike said this was the, how this podcast came to be.
We're talking about this bar story
and yeah. We're like, you know what? That would, a handful of people might want to hear this story.
Yeah. They're probably like, what the fuck is a pisco? What are they even talking about? Go back to bourbon. I'm like, no, man. Yeah, we'll get to bourbon. Don't worry about that.
We'll get to bourbon.
There's like 1,000 podcasts about bourbon. Just chill out, guy. Read a book. Culture yourself.
Yeah, we will get there.
You're going to have a good time with Pisco. So I guess first, like, what is Pisco?
Yeah, what is Pisco?
It's a colorless to yellowish to amberish colored brandy produced in winemaking regions in both Peru and Chile. Although they'll disagree on who truly makes it.
Correct.
It can be made in both Peru and Chile. And it's made by distilling fermented grape juice. So when you think about it, it's kind of like a brandy, but it's not. And it's kind of like a grappa, but it's not. Pisco is kind of its own thing. I mean, it falls in line with those.
Yeah, it falls in line with grape brandy. But, right. Yeah.
But it's different. And when, you know, as we get into it, we'll explain why it is different and it is truly its own thing. Well, the way it came to be is, I think it's, this is always the most fun for me, is really going into the history of how a spirit.
Where it came from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you had these different, I guess, tribes living in South America, and you had the Spanish conquistadors who came over in the 16th century. And they were settling and they were spreading the good word of Spain.
The good word of Spain in the 1500s.
searching for gold, the fountain of youth, and who the hell else knows what Spanish conquistadors were searching for during those times. But when they traveled, they would take with them, they were also spreading. Right, colonies, creating colonies too. So it wasn't like they were just looking for gold and coming back. No. I mean, they were creating colonies.
Taking land.
which pretty much every great kingdom did during those times. They conquered things.
This land is my land. This land is not your land.
Well, so anyway, in the 16th century, they go over there, they settle, and they make their way over to what we know as Peru and Chile and that whole side of South America. And what they brought with them was kind of like a wine or brandy called the Orujo? Orujo? Is that how you say that? It's O-R-U-J-O. It's a pumice brandy imported by Spain. And it was mostly used for holy purposes, like a holy communion, a holy communion wine.
Yeah, like a communion type thing.
Yeah, and so that's where a lot of those wines would go. Although I'm sure a lot of the sailors were...
Having communion all the time with the bottle.
Hey guys, it's time for communion. They're like, it's communion time somewhere. You know? The rest of us are like, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, and these conquistadors are like, well, I'm sure somewhere in the world it's communion time.
might as well partake.
and so, you know, I'm sure they lost a few bottles like that. And then I also imagine that a lot of these guys were just tired of waiting a couple months. For Spanish import brandy from Spain to be imported into these further regions in South America. So they started creating something. And it was really Marquis Francisco de Caravates who imported grapes from the Spanish Canary Islands to the city of Inca, which is in South Peru, because it was sunny, arid lands, was just really perfect or ripe.
There you go.
You like that? For growing grapes. It was a coastal valley. It had very unique soil, and it produced a really interesting grape varietal that really lent itself well to this new style of brandy. And they started doing that in 1563.
Yeah, and they essentially introduced grapes to Peru and Chile.
Yeah, because I didn't see anywhere that they had, I mean, it seems strange that they wouldn't have grapes, but
there's some dry land out there.
Yeah, it really is. So yeah, they kind of did. They changed the land.
Yeah.
Not like terraforming, but they did introduce
brought a backhoe and just kind of, you know, dug this thing up.
They changed the whole landscape. And as we found out, the oldest use of the word pisco was to denote Peruvian aguardiente.
Aguardiente.
Oh my God, I struggle so much with
aguardiente.
Aguardiente.
Arguar. Aguardiente, which means fire water.
Fire water or sometimes burning water. It's something between 30 and 60% alcohol by volume. And the earliest records of that actually are in 1764, which I thought was...
And this is what their spirit was called before it was named Pisco. This is what they would distill, and they called it aguardiente.
Aguardiente.
And then the word Pisco followed a little bit after.
Right, because what you come to see in Peru, there's a valley named Pisco. There's a river named Pisco. And then there's the port of
Pisco. Port of Pisco.
Pisco. And there's like, well, where does Pisco come from? What does that mean? Well, it comes from a Quechua word from one of the... The indigenous people of Peru at the time spoke a language called Quechua, one of the most common. It was considered the people's language, and another name for it is Ramasimi, if I'm saying that right. Man, there's...
I'll take your word on that.
Ramasimi. Ramusimi, which kind of means the people's language. So you got the people's champ, which was The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. And then you got the people's language, which is...
Quechua.
Which is Quechua, and that's where Pisco comes from. It loosely translates to, I believe, a little bird.
Yeah.
And it's the second most spoken language in Peru, and one of the things I thought was really fascinating about the Quechua language, it's like, consider America, and America's not even that old, but imagine the Native American language, like code talkers back in World War II.
Yeah.
Like code talkers, the Navajos. Imagine if that was the second most spoken language in America.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, but we got rid of it. We made everything American, and that's kind of sad. But in Peru, they didn't. I mean, they obviously, the Spaniards came, they conquered. Spanish became the most popular language, but the second most popular language is still Quechua. And you even said, right, like when you were in Peru, people still spoke the language.
Oh, yeah, it was all over. I mean, we had a lot of people down there spoke English, which is, I feel like a lot of the world is taking on English because Americans won't learn a second language, which is sad.
We're good. We're like, sad. This one works.
But as far as that native language, Quechua, they a lot of them speak that. It seemed like a lot more the older generation spoke it more so than the younger generation. I'm not sure if that's something that's like kind of slowly not being as passed down, but they are still very much tied to that and their heritage and culture. And
that's, you know, awesome. I mean, yeah. I think that's fantastic, and I think we can all learn a lesson from that too. Like, that's your culture, that's your heritage. You should hold on to that. You should be proud of that.
Right, right.
I mean, I just think it's right, and I think it's great that even though they were conquistadors, they still, I don't know, they kind of merged into it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's kind of what it sounds like. I mean, maybe I'm wrong on that, but... So anyway, so the conquistadors show up in 1532. They start bringing with them Christianity because clearly Catholicism and Christianity didn't exist in Peru prior to the...
Probably not.
No, because they were like Incas. Wasn't that Incas and Mayans? The Incas were in Peru. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Incas, so they had their own gods they were worshiping.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they brought with them, and they didn't just bring anybody. They brought the Jesuits with them, which is probably the most hardcore of them.
Yeah, you love those guys, don't you?
They're insane. So these are the hardcore religious guys. I mean, they take three vows, one of poverty, one of chastity, and one of obedience. And they live their life like that. I mean, they're good people. But it's like, it's hardcore. So these guys, the Jesuits, were responsible for the production of wine in the region, because they were using it for holy reasons,
spiritual
holy things. Yeah. So so they would take the best grapes, and then they would give the leftover grapes to the local farmers, which is a nice thing to do.
Yeah,
because they
here's our leftovers. I mean, yeah, in one sense, it's a good thing.
Yes, because they didn't have any grapes, and I imagine grapes were.
I don't think it was a thing there.
It wasn't, but you know, now they're like, oh my God, these grapes, it's like...
You know what is a thing down there? Completely off topic with that.
What's that?
They have over 40 different varieties of potato in Peru.
No way.
Dude, it was insane.
What?
Yeah. Yep.
They got the Irish run for their money.
We had a guy that was going with us one day and showing us a bunch of different things, and they said 40 different... I was like, there's no way. And they showed us different spots.
I mean, was like, one potato, two potato, three.
I mean, you know, they could have been lying to us, but we were driving in a car and they'd point, hey, you see those plants are there? Yeah, oh, that's purple potato. Okay. Well. I was like, all right. And then we'd drive a little bit further. And like, you see to the left, you see those plants? That's a different potato. I'm like, yeah, it's a different potato farmer. I see.
You see that guy? He's got another kind of potato.
But no, it was kind of funny because we were down there, and that was one of the things that was like special to Peru. Like, they have over 40 different varieties of potato.
Wow, no way.
You know, maybe I couldn't think of my feet at the time, but they said, well, what does what's the U.S.'s, you know, what is the one thing that they have that no one else in the world has? And I was like, fast food and burgers? I mean, you know. That's kind of a hard question to answer. I'm like, I'm not sure what the U.S. has that is only ours that most other places don't.
Everyone
tobacco?
No, because they all copy. Like, everyone kind of has their own sort of Americanized thing. So I don't know if there's anything. I mean, obviously, like apple pie, baseball.
Yeah, but when you're talking to somebody that has a thousand-year-old culture, 40 different types of potato, and they're making pisco, and you're like, yeah, we have baseball and apple pie.
You guys heard of baseball?
Yeah. That's what makes you feel really small.
You're right. We're only like 240 years old, man. Give us time.
Yeah, we're getting there.
We haven't really lived. We're still making our way. We're still scrapping. Yikes on bikes. So here the Jesuits are making this wine. And then the farmers get the leftover grapes, and they're like, oh, man. You know what we do with these grapes? You know, it'd be really cool to do with these grapes. Instead of turning it into wine, we'll turn it into fire water, burning water, aguardiente water.
Aguardiente. There you go.
So they did, and they started distilling it. And you got aguardiente. And then the conquistadors were like, do these guys know how to party or what? Because
they're like, you know what? In my mind, I feel like that's exactly how that went.
I'm almost certain that's
how that happened.
You know,
one of the Spaniards walked up to the farmer.
He's like, what
you
drinking?
Has this yeah.
And he's like, holy shit.
Yeah, why don't you try this? And he goes, yep, you guys can party.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, and then he went back to his conquistador pals, and he's like, oh, we got a party going on.
Yeah. Here. You know all those good grapes? You should give it to those farmers.
Hey, don't just eat those grapes, man.
Yeah.
Give them to these guys.
Stop eating the grapes. So that's how we got pisco, Mike.
Just seems like a great time. Take a break, Joey. What do you think?
Yeah, we'll take a break and let Mike gather his thoughts, and we'll come back.
I feel like I'm not just me, Joey. I feel like...
Hey, I'll gather some thoughts, too.
Gather your thoughts. We'll be right back, guys.
Hey everyone, Joey Barber here from Bar Curious Podcast. I want to tell you a little bit about my bar in Raleigh, North Carolina. Not only do we specialize in craft cocktails, but we've also won Best Whiskey Bar in Raleigh 2 years in a row. One of the things that sets us apart from the rest is our expansive collection of vintage spirits. We have everything from bourbon, scotch, gin, Amaros, dating back from Prohibition all the way to the 1990s. If there's a unique pour that you're looking for that no one else has, this is your spot. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Blind Barber, or email us at contact@blindbarber.com. Join our email list to be updated on future tastings and private events. Hey, Mike, you know who I hold in high regard?
Who's that, Joey?
Mechanics and people who know how to work on cars.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Back when I was a combat engineer in the Marine Corps, I had the opportunity to be a platoon commander of the heavy equipment platoon. And I'll tell you, my guys could fix anything.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter how much knowledge you have if you don't have the right parts.
That's right. And that's why when you are working on a car, you need to check out my friends, the LKQ crew. They're the number one in auto collision repair industry for parts both body and mechanical. Check them out at lkqcorp.com for more info and all your auto repair needs. LKQ crew.
That's good.
All right, guys, and we're back. Thanks for coming back.
Hopefully.
Hopefully you come back. So I, one thing I forgot to mention was part of Joey's story in the beginning, how he went down to Peru and he hung out this really cool bartender in this really cool fucking bar. Bought a bottle of Peru.
I did bring back a bottle of Peru. A bottle. In that bottle of Peru, God. It's Pisco. Hey, but you're not wrong. It is it is Peru in a bottle.
It's Peru in a bottle.
It really is Peru in a bottle.
The problem is I'm thinking about what I'm going to say next. Like, my brain is like, all right, Mike, you're going to get this point across. But you better come up with something.
Yeah,
clever
you
to
and
say
that
next.
Brain.
And then
you gotta
my
be
brain's
careful
like,
with that.
I'll slide this in real quick. And then it says things it's not supposed to.
No worries. Yeah, Pisco in a bottle.
He brought back a bottle of Pisco from Peru.
That's really good. It's called, The brand is Sarque, and it's a Pisco Puro.
Oh my God. We'll talk about what that means.
Yeah, later. we'll get into that. But this is essentially just one varietal of grape. And it's really good. It's unaged. It's
amazing.
Oh, it's, I mean, yeah.
It is the most.
I mean, as stupid as it sounds, it smells like fresh grapes.
But it smells even, it smells like perfume, like a sexy, not, okay, so you know, you get some of those perfumes and
so
you're like,
smells like
perfume. Smells like a stripper and you're like.
I don't know what perfume you've been on, Mike, but there's no stripper perfume in my house.
Man, at your bar, some people come in and you're
yes,
like,
there's stripper
oh
perfume
my God,
at the
it
bar.
Smells like stripper perfume. Yes. I mean, I smell it at Revival.
Yeah,
every so often when you
that bar
nothing bad. I enjoy it. Like, it smells good. It reminds me of yesteryear, my young 20s,
your young days.
As a young man, as a brand new lieutenant in the Marine Corps with my friends, the Marines, going out to the different clubs.
Takes me back to
younger. To the but not this. Not base. This though. Not this. This smells like expensive, elegant, very elegant, very refined. Yeah, it's elegant. It's like.
Have you tried it yet?
No, I'm just really.
Oh, you should jump
I'm
in.
I'm just
though.
Like, man, that's really good.
Super smooth.
God, it tastes.
That's Pisco.
Like, it's almost like it smells. Very, like.
It's refined.
Elegant.
It's not, yeah, it's not.
Refined,
it's not harsh. It's not.
Elegant. Floral.
Very floral.
Like, extremely floral. I don't taste. You know, like, so if you drink certain brandies, you know, grape brandy, cognacs,
right.
Especially some of the, there are some unaged stuff, like the Eau de Vie. It's kind of
yeah.
like a.
Eau de Vie, yep.
Eau de Vie. And you know, that's unaged, but that tastes like grapes. It's almost like a
yeah,
box
of that
raisins.
Has a lot different.
It's so different.
To it, yeah.
But this is not that at all.
No.
I mean, this is.
Well, one of that.
Amazing.
One is the varietal of grape. It has to do with that. And also with this one, they. Well, we'll talk about it more later, but they age it by resting it. So it's not really aged in a
no, it
barrel
sits in,
or anything.
It
just kind of sits in a glass jug or...
Yeah, or a stainless steel tank right. or something. Wow, it's remarkably complex when it comes... I mean, coming from one grape variety. It's almost... God,
it's very
like
citrusy.
A, yeah. And
like
it's
fresh
bright,
lemon, yeah.
Very bright, very aromatic. Wow.
It's almost difficult to describe.
Look, guys, this Pisco is sexy. I mean, if that's my one word,
it's sexy.
One word descriptor. Like, I like to give one word descriptors the things that I try. And for this, I would say sexy. This, the aromatics, the palate, just everything is very refined. It's bright. It's refreshing.
From Lima, Peru.
Yeah, it's not even that sweet.
42% alcohol.
I mean, it's
yeah,
a little sweet, but it's
yeah.
not sweet. Like, like you would almost think like it might be sweet, but it's really not. It's just, where can I get some of that? I got to fly to Peru.
You have to know somebody.
No one's letting Americans in anymore right now, so I can't even fly to Peru if I wanted to.
It's pretty funny that everyone's kind of been like, well, no, you can't come to our country.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, America? Well, guess what? We're going to turn the stakes on you. Yeah.
Joke's on you. And then some guy like, ah, how the turntables. And you're like, what? All right,
so anyway about these Pisco, yeah.
Jesus, we got a timeline to discuss. So, yeah, okay, obviously, we talked a little bit about, you know, the 1500s, the conquistadors coming over and that whole thing.
Bringing the grapes.
You know,
yeah.
And then as time goes on, you know, the industry starts to change, and it was in the mid-17th century that you really started to see production expand, distribution kind of blow up along the entire coast of Peru and Chile. It wasn't just something that was amazing to drink, like the favorite drink of the region and part in the time, but it was also used a lot for trade. So
right.
if you didn't have money or anything of any other value. Like the Pisco is worth more than its weight in gold. since none of them found gold over there. So like the Pisco is kind of their gold. In the 18, and then what do? We move into the 19th. Yeah, but before we get into the 19th century, you know, it makes its way to America in the 1830s, right?
Yes.
It comes over the 1870s. It gets real popular in San Francisco during the gold rush
area.
Yeah, and I didn't think of it until now, but I'm like, how did it get up into San Francisco? I guess the port of Pisco, the boats, was a natural way for them for trade to run up the coast into San Francisco?
I'm not sure.
Because was that the only thing they must have been bringing something else from.
I mean,
Peru.
I doubt they're just going to bring Pisco straight up.
Like, hey, guys, who's here to party? Like,
hey, can you bring us some of that Pisco that we've been hearing about?
It's all the farmers and the conquistadors are like, hey, we got to share this to our friends in the north.
Where should we go? San Francisco.
I hear San Francisco's cool this time of year. And they come up, and they came up with just boats of Pisco. But that's like, it just became this most, like, really... I didn't see really anywhere else that it became like insanely popular. And
yeah, I think that's kind of where it picked up was
in yeah, San but Francisco above area. But among other all things, other things, like, you know what I mean? Why not tequila? Freaking Mexico is right there.
That's a very good point.
You know, and or some of the other, I don't know, even whiskey. Wow. I
don't know. Yeah, I mean, it was already in the country.
It was already making it. Yeah. Like, didn't have to.
You have to go too far.
I mean. They had to cross the mountains, but yeah. They could have made their own. They had stills in California.
That's a good point.
I don't know. I guess it's kind of curious. Bar curious. Why? How Pisco made its way up here. I'm going to go with the conquistadors going, hey, you want the party with us?
I think that sounds a lot better.
Yeah, let's do that. So it makes its way over San Francisco in the 1870s, and it became very famous in a particular drink called the Pisco Punch. That was invented in at the famous Bank Exchange, right? A bar, yeah. But it was a bar called the Bank Exchange or tavern called. It wasn't like a legitimate bank.
It's not a bank.
Clever name, though. I love.
Yeah,
that
I'm
name.
Not sure. Was that a standalone bar? Or was that a hotel?
I don't know.
Because a lot of times back then, all these famous, like world famous bars were actually hotel bars.
Right. You know, that made sense because you'd put the people up in the room and they come down and drink and
we'll have to look more into that.
I have to look into the Bank Exchange. I mean, it sounds like some hipster bar name that you would find, especially in San Francisco. Well, like, I guess
even in the 1800s, it was some hipster parts.
But you're like, what hipster existed with his man bun in San Francisco in the 1870s? So anyway, so it becomes it becomes popular at this really famous place called the Bank Exchange. It was a Pisco Punch. And it was described, I found, twice.
And this is the funniest thing I've heard.
Oh, my God. This is so brilliant.
The
so,
way that a critic would write.
Well, he wasn't. I don't think he was a critic. I think he was an author or a poet.
Well, he was
But he wrote in a book.
Whether it was good or bad.
Well, that's all. Yeah, it's true. His name is Rudyard Kipling, and that's spelled Rudyard.
Yeah, we definitely have to give this guy credit.
Rudyard. I mean, that's a pretty... God, that's a pimp name. I am Rudyard.
Rudyard?
That's how I would say it.
Yeah, okay.
I am Rudyard Kipling, and this is my book, C2C. So that's
probably why I explained this quote the way that he did.
Look, I'm going to give this quote in that accent. So he, in his book, C2C, Rudyard Kipling says, when describing the Pisco Punch... Shavings of cherub's wings, the glory of a tropical dawn, red clouds of sunset, and fragments of lost epics by dead poets. Tell me that's not like the most...
That is exactly what I get out of a Pisco Punch, too. Like, that is... That's...
I'm like, man, I've done like whiskey tastings, and I'm like, hey, no wrong answers.
Shavings of cherub wings. I mean, that's...
What do you get when you taste this bourbon? And people are like, oh, my God... It tastes like my grandma's kitchen. You know, she's baking, because, you know, it's baking spice and that stuff in bourbon. And they're like, oh, man, it tastes like baking spice. It reminds me of my grandma's kitchen. And I'm like, oh, shit, that's wild. But that takes you there. That takes you there. And this guy's like, no.
He's like, let me really tell you what I think about this.
No. You don't understand, dude. I'm like, list shavings of cherub wings, red clouds of sunset. Fragments of lost epics by dead poets.
I can't help but think that's how I'm going to start describing taste to people. They're like, wait, what does that taste like? Well, have you ever tasted shavings from a cherub wing?
And you're like, I want to party with Rudyard Kipling. I don't know where he's at.
That's conquistador partying there.
And then the other thing is the other side of the equation, or the other side of the coin, or whatever you want to say, by another writer who said, yeah, it tastes like tastes like lemonade, but comes back with a kick as a rope steer.
Both very like, acceptable.
You're like, what the fuck?
two great reviews on the Pisco Punch.
Oh, this other guy must have been like digging for gold that day, like just one of those 49er guys.
Tastes like lemonade, but comes back with the kick of a roped steer. That's just awesome. I mean, the fact that we can go from cherub wing shavings to a roped steer.
Hey, man, everything in between.
And you know,
you can literally experience.
Well, here's what's funny about that, and you know, it kind of makes you wonder too, because Pisco, depending on brand and what grapes and regions and everything else is normal, it tastes very, very, very different. I mean, you can get some very harsh tasting Pisco. It's just like earthy and mossy, and you can get some Pisco that we're having right now that's super smooth and elegant. Maybe these two guys had two different types of Pisco. You know?
Yep. It's like tripping on two different, like one guy's getting a good trip and the other one's like seeing dragons.
The one's getting kicked by a rope steer, apparently. So,
like, it's just getting really weird up in here.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, there it is. It's in America now. It's in San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco.
Everyone's experiencing Pisco and they're all experiencing it very differently. And what an amazing experience that is. But then the 19th century, we saw a bit of a decline as a result of the Civil War and Napoleon actually invading Spain. There were conflicts in South America. So there was this huge problem that was going on, and Peru was deeply affected by a lot of these things.
Land boundaries were being shifted as well.
Yeah, specifically in that region, right? I mean, there were parts of Peru that became Chile later.
Right.
Right.
Right. That's kind of where this turns full round.
Right. And we're going to get to that in a little bit. And then in the 20th century, Peruvian Pisco went into a decline as a result of a lot of the things I just spoke of. And then in Chile, it continued to grow. So much so that in 1931, the Chilean government obtained a domination of, or not a domination. They're trying to dominate. They're trying to dominate the Pisco world. But it was a denomination of origin, which allows them to produce Pisco exclusively.
They came up with it, pretty much.
They basically stole it from Peru and said, no, this is ours. We are the makers of Pisco, and we are declaring it. What the World Intellectual Property Organization, which is like a real thing that gives you these denominations of origin. So, I mean, you think of it the same way, like tequila has a denomination of origin. It can only be made in Jalisco, Mexico, and certain municipalities around it. You can't legally you can take 100% blue agave and make it in Raleigh, North Carolina, and turn it into a tequila, but you can't, by law, call it tequila.
Right.
Right. Similar in this regard. Once a country receives that denomination of origin, the other countries are supposed to respect that. Like, you can't make bourbon
outside the U.S.
Outside the U.S.
Yeah.
Right. And because that's our denomination of origin. We made it so in 1964 when Congress passed this act.
Yeah.
So a similar thing. So the Chilean government steals it, and the World Intellectual Property Organization, which sounds like the biggest scam there is, like some weird pyramid scheme, but evidently they're the ones who give these things out. And they wrote them a letter and were like, well, we want this. And they're like, yep, sounds good enough to us. And they were like, here you go.
No one else has claimed it.
No one else has claimed it in 400 years. Like, no one else has said anything, so you can have it. So that happened, and that kind of led us to where we are now. I mean, it really wasn't until 1999 that the Peruvian government finally got around to applying for its own denomination of origin.
Which is insane.
Insane, man.
Especially with these two countries fighting as much as they do. And look, this isn't just these guys, you know, don't like each other because, I mean, they full-blown argue over who created Pisco. I mean, it's insane to be down in Peru and actually see that. So
I can only imagine. I want I want to go see this.
We should do that after the show. We should just go down there.
All right, guys, we're getting on a plane.
Well, we have to tell them we're from Canada or something, that they won't let us in.
That's right. Be like, oh, hey there, we're Canadian. Eh?
You want to see Pisco, eh?
We're looking for some Pisco, yeah.
But no, I mean, what's funny about that is you said, 1931 is when...
The Chilean government did it, but
yeah, so Peru didn't even. Yeah, they waited over 60 years to actually get on board with trying to contest that.
They must have had some man. Maybe they were just like world intellectual property, or what the fuck? Like,
they probably were thinking it was a pyramid scheme too. No,
I know. They're like, I'm not falling for this.
What multi level marketing company is this?
They're like, how much money is it, the application fee? And then what? But they did. They finally did, and. 1999. So now there's actually two DOs.
Yeah.
Denominations of Origins, affectionately known as the DO. Probably not affectionately. But there's two of them. Chile has its own and Peru does. Because I guess Peru, well, as we'll talk about here in a little bit, is way, way more strict on their production. Than Chile. Chile is like, we're just going to make some stuff.
Yeah, Chile.
Peru is like.
Yeah, Chilean Pisco and Peruvian Pisco are very different.
Though they share the same name.
They share grapes. That's about all they share.
They share this commonality in this one fruit.
Yep.
Which has how many gajillion types of varietals?
Close to that gajillion. That's probably
a real number. Look it up. I'm certain it's a real number. It may not be enough. I have no idea if it's a real number. So there's no resolution. There's been requests on both sides to the World Intellectual Property Organization, and yet still nothing has been resolved, which is absolutely remarkable to me.
Right.
Everything we just discussed, it's like, how the hell do you not see it for these? Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But, maybe it's because they make it differently, and it's like, well, it's like calling whiskey, there's whiskey, right? I mean, we have whiskey, but you also have Scotch whiskey. You have bourbon whiskey.
You have Irish.
You have Canadian. And each set of whiskeys has its own set of rules. Maybe they're looking at it through that lens. Maybe this is just a larger category of spirit, Pisco. Because
so Peru's like Scotland, where they're like, no, whiskey is Scotch.
Yeah.
Bourbon is not whiskey. Nothing is whiskey.
Nothing is whiskey unless it's Scotch whiskey. But, as we'll see, too, we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll talk about maybe that's why it is, because there are different grape varietals and different styles.
Yeah.
And stay tuned for the exciting conclusion of Pisco.
Bar Curious. Mike, what are you doing?
Not what?
You're eating all the pizza. Save some for the studio.
No, man, it's too good.
You're supposed to be driving right now.
Yeah, I can multitask, Joey. I can eat a slice of pizza and drive a car.
Mike, there's a pepperoni in your beard.
No, I regret nothing.
You guys want to try the best pizza in Raleigh? Head on over to Vic's Italian Restaurant downtown. Visit them at vicsitalianrestaurant.com and make sure you follow their pizza bus at Vic's Pizza Bus on social media.
So good. Hey guys, it's your old friend Mike here, and I want to tell you about my bar, Revival 1869. And though we may not be in Raleigh, it is just outside of it in a cute little town called Clayton. We're actually right on the historic Main Street. We focus on craft cocktails. In fact, so much so that we make our own cocktail syrup in-house. We also fresh squeeze all of our juices. I'm also proud to say we have nearly 300 different bottles of whiskey, and that's a lot of fun, especially if you're a whiskey drinker. We also started a YouTube channel. It's called the Revival Social Club. It's more cheeky and fun. We talk history, tell some stories, but most importantly, we teach you how to make your own favorite cocktails at home. So, check that out if you want. You can see everything we have going on at revival1869.com. Check us out on Instagram and Facebook at revival1869. And if you're interested in some of our cocktail syrups, well, check those out at Revival Syrups. We'll be right back. right, guys, welcome back to the exciting conclusion of Pisco.
Pisco Hour.
It's Pisco Hour with Mike and Joey. So, you know, just to kind of really hammer home the dispute feud.
Oh, it's definitely a feud.
It's hardcore feud.
Yeah.
Just to really hammer that home and kind of how did that start? There's a big geographical shifting, right? Is that how you say it? A redrawing of the map?
Yeah.
Relaying the line?
Boundary zone.
Tear down that wall and build another one? I don't know. There was a lot of something.
So, one of the things that Peru is arguing is that one of the cities that they started distilling Pisco in is, in today's world, actually part of Chile. And it was part of Peru before their whole revolutions that happened in South America. And so Peru is saying, yeah, that used to be Peruvian territory, so we started Pisco. And Chile saying, well, guess what, it's in our country, so I guess we started Pisco. So,
oh really?
Oh yeah, well there's a Chilean address, so how's that?
It's almost
so that's kind of like another just part of their fight is, I mean, these boundaries are, I don't know,
fairly recent too, right?
Yeah, I mean
if you go really bad, but you know, and it's also one town. It's like one town.
Yeah,
it's
like one or two,
one of like
small village towns almost, you know. It's just,
and you have,
it took over a lot of both countries.
It did, but I think it's hard that anyone disputes that it started in Chile. I mean, you have a region in Peru literally called Pisco, the valley of Pisco. You have a river that runs through that valley called Pisco. You have a port
of Pisco
called Pisco, and that all happened before the conquistadors landed. It was known that before them because it's in the Quechuan language. Quechua, right?
Yeah, Quechua, yeah.
I always feel like I'm saying that. But the Quechua language, which existed way before the Spaniards arrived. So it wasn't like the Spanish conquistadors were like, ah, this is now Pisco. They didn't draw those boundaries. Like, it was, that was it, and that was what it was named.
I'm definitely on the Peruvian side. Seems like there's a lot of weight on Peru rather than.
Oh yeah, well, it also sounds like
Peru's,
you know,
got a lot of evidence.
Like you got the kids, and they're like good kids, and they're playing ball or frisbee or football or something in their front yard, and then like the one ball goes over the fence to the mean old man's yard, and he's like, "You see this? This is mine now. This belongs to me. This is mine now." That's kind of what sounds like Chile's doing to Peru. They're like, "Oh, really? Well, this village is mine now. Pisco is mine now because this one village was yours, but it's mine now."
It's kind of what it sounds.
Doesn't
like.
It sound like that?
That's actually sort of how that bartender in Peru described it to us. I mean, it was almost word for word.
Oh, yeah, really? Well, this is mine now.
Yeah, like, pretty much. He said, yeah, Pisco used to be distilled in this one little village that was in Peru, and now it's in Chile. So screw them.
I'm going to say it. This might upset Chileans. Chile, you're kind of like the Karen of the world right now.
When it comes to Pisco.
Not to other things. You do a lot of other things very, very well. But when it comes to Pisco, you're kind of the Karen.
Yeah,
I'm gonna get a lot of hate for that. But
I mean,
it sounds like it. They're like,
just drop the Pisco.
Oh, really?
Chile.
This is mine. It's Chile. He's like going over to Peru's manager, going, "I want to speak to you. I want to speak to your manager, Peru." And you're like, "What? The Pisco's mine.
I'd like to speak to your boundary drawer."
Let me speak to your manager. And then Peru's like, "We don't have a manager. We just make Pisco here." And like, no, we make it now. But so, you know, and then,
I love
and then,
your conquistador accent too. That's because you still went conquistador there, didn't you?
I will always go conquistador. But the other thing that trips me out, this is totally a Karen move too.
Sorry to all the Karens, by the way. Because
if your name is like legitimately Karen,
that's what I'm saying.
But if you act like a Karen, I'm not so sorry. You know what I mean. You know who you are.
That I'm not sorry about.
No. We've all seen, especially in our industry, we know who you are.
We know.
I know. But the thing, you know, it even furthers the insanity of Chile's like hold on Pisco is the fact that in 1936, the Chilean government changed the name of a town to Pisco. The town was named La Union.
Yep.
And they changed that town's name to Pisco an attempt to further their claim that Pisco.
You see this? We have a town called Pisco. Obviously started Pisco.
And it's like, that's like the most Karen thing you can do is like, oh, really? Because I have a town called Pisco.
It's kind of like,
you just did it. And as they're making this claim, I imagine, the welcome sign, it said welcome to La Union, and then like it says welcome to Pisco, but it's like a piece of wood, and then the nail comes loose and then it like swings down.
it's like when Amazon was looking for new headquarters on the East Coast, and they're like, oh, Georgia, we'll change the name of one of our towns to Amazon Georgia.
It's like
you know why? Because we started Amazon.
Because we started Amazon, we're gonna change the name of this town. You're like, the hell, you can't just do that.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. And I imagine driving through Chile and then coming through La Union and the paint's still drying on the sign. And you're like, what? This was something else, huh? That's not fair. We shouldn't say that.
It's not fair.
It's really not fair because they actually do make Pisco, and they actually make really good Pisco.
They do
make
good Pisco.
It's just different, right? I mean, what we're making fun of is the claim to the name Pisco because it seems hard to argue.
Yeah, sort of the feud. It's kind of
seems childish. Yeah. Childish, which is Karen-ish. So let's get into that because
some of the differences. At
yeah, have. I mean because we both. I don't actually make shit, but especially now with our bars being closed,
you don't make anything right.
So some facts: the Peruvians, they make three different styles of Pisco.
Yeah, so the styles are puro, which is what we were trying, which is essentially just a single varietal of grape is used. They have another style is called acholado, which is a blend of varietals. So they might use two or three or four different varietals of grape to actually get the flavoring they're looking for.
Which is neat. So before you get onto the third one, it's I just thought of this, but if you're a Scotch drinker, think single malt to blended Scotch.
Exactly.
Kind of the same concept, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of.
Kind of.
Right, I said kind of.
All right, so the last style that Peru has is Mike's favorite. It's called Mosto Verde. And so essentially what that is
green must.
That's right, green must. So essentially what they do is they distill the grape that has not been completely fermented. So they let it ferment, but they don't let it completely ferment.
I wonder how they
I don't
that,
know. Man. Is that like just discretionary? Like, yeah, that looks like it's about halfway fermented.
How? I don't even, man, I used to think I knew a lot. I used to think I knew a lot about distillation, fermentation, just, the nature of our business until I saw this and it said mostly ferment or partially fermented.
Yeah, incomplete. Yeah. And then I'm like, fermented.
What indicators are there? Man, if you're a Pisco maker, I really hope you write in. Like, please email us and let us know. I mean, this just sounds crazy that you're like, it's about partially fermented.
Yeah, it looks good.
Hold on. Where's my conquistador accent? I think this is partially fermented.
I don't know.
I don't know, but it looks pretty partially done.
Just set a timer. It's like for about 80 minutes.
Is it like doing a soft boiled egg, You put an egg in a pot of water and you boil it and it gets hard, hard boiled egg. But if you put it in that same pot of water, but for half the time, you get a soft boiled egg. It's really good.
Turn scrambled, it's too long.
Wait, what?
I don't know. Yeah, so that's the three main styles of Peruvian Pisco. Essential single varietal, they have a blend of varietals, and then the partially fermented.
The partially fermented, a lot of times, is considered their super premium style, too, because it gives you
more artisanal.
Artisanal.
Yeah.
Yeah, artisanal or super premium. It's greener. It has a richer flavor and greater texture as a result of only being partially fermented. I thought that was fascinating. And then those are the three styles of Pisco. And then you go into the different varieties of grapes that you're allowed to make into Pisco, of which there are eight. And of those eight, you can actually divide those into two categories. We have our aromatic category and we have our non-aromatic category.
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and tell you what those are, Mike. Because I have those in front of me.
That's what I was waiting for, Joe.
So I got
trying to hand it back to you.
I got the varietals. Yeah, so like Mike said, there's eight varietals of grapes that are legally able to use for Pisco in Peru. The aromatic is obviously going to give it more aromatics.
Right, brighter.
It's going to be brighter.
More obvious on the nose.
The non-aromatic might be a little bit harsher, a little bit
less obvious.
Earthier. Yeah.
So I guess for the wine drinkers out there, if you're thinking about it, an aromatic, the brighter, more obvious, kind of like a Sauvignon Blanc, if a white wine drinker. For a non-aromatic, a little less obvious on the nose, more weight, like a Chardonnay.
Yeah,
right, something like that. Would you say that? Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So the varietals for Peru for the aromatics, they use Moscato de Alejandría, which is also called Italia. They use Torrontel, Moscatel Rosada, and Abilla. And I'm not sure if we can find any of those in our grocery store around here.
not likely.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's their aromatics. The non-aromatics they use are Quebranta, Molar, Negro Corriente, and Uvina. So they're all Spanish grapes, obviously.
Yeah, man, when I was practicing those words before we started, I was
I hope Joey does those words.
I'm going to try to pass this off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm not as good as...
It's because my wife speaks Spanish, isn't it? You're just like, you know what? I'm just going to pass his words to Joey.
I butcher words all the time. It's just
I didn't want you to try any half of those.
No, I didn't either. So I'll talk about the stuff I can say.
Yeah.
So so a lot of times what you're going to find is distilled between 38 and 48% alcohol by volume. It will always be distilled in a copper pot still. They will not use a column pot or a column still. It's only ever in a copper pot still. It is rested for at least 3 months in a neutral container.
What's a neutral container?
Which is, well, I was about to say, it's one of the more important parts.
There you go. We need to make sure we know what it's like.
It's a glass container or typically a stainless steel container.
Yeah.
So the idea is that the Pisco is not maturing. Like if you think bourbon, a lot of the process for the maturation is the fact that the bourbon is interacting with the wood and it's getting a lot of the flavor from that. Well, from a lot of spirits, it interacts with the wood and gets some flavor from it. In the case for Pisco, you don't want any sort of additional interaction. In fact, you're not allowed to have any additional interaction with anything. It has to sit in a neutral container, like a stainless steel or glass container, and just allow it to rest, and it will naturally kind of, I don't know, age?
Yeah, well, it essentially lets it oxidize.
Okay.
So it lets it oxidize, but instead of throwing it, like if you threw it in an oak barrel or something, it adds in tannins and other flavors.
Different sugars,
it just kind of changes
oakiness,
it up a little bit. Yeah. But when you put it in the stainless steel, it allows it to oxidize but not take on those flavors that they don't want.
Yeah, which is, I think, remarkable. I mean, you're really pulling or maintaining the integrity of that grape varietal.
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
What you're trying to do. You're not trying to change it, enhance it,
yeah,
modify
it. Sort of that pure flavor.
So then let's get onto some chili stuff because they make good pisco too.
They do.
Man, we got to...
Yeah,
I feel bad now. It's been almost an hour.
We've been crushing chile.
But, okay,
yes,
let's be honest. They're a bit more relaxed.
Right.
It's kind of like, we're making pisco. And then
do what you want to.
Do it. Hey, if it feels good, do it, bro. That's kind of their mentality, where Peru is very much very traditional, very hard-lined on their rules. And it's
a little more old school.
Very old school, yeah. Very traditional. And I would say more quality over quantity.
Yes.
Would you agree?
I would agree with that.
And then the Chileans are more almost quantity over the quality, not saying that it's bad quality, but just saying that they've relaxed a lot of those rules.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as quantity goes, like you're saying, just as an example, Peru has over 400 pisco producers.
Oh wow.
And they make about 6 million liters a year, which is a lot. Chile has far fewer producers. They only have about 10 producers, but they make 35 million liters. So those 10 producers make 6 times the amount of pisco as Peru.
Oh wow.
So when you look at things that way, I mean, 400 pisco producers making 6 million, they're making very small batches. It's not this large there's some large operations, but it's more of a mom and pops rather than just a handful of producers making 90% of.
But then even still with that, they're a lot more relaxed. So where in Peru, you're only using 8 grape varieties, in Chile, you have the potential to use up to 13, although they're only really using 5.
Yeah, they're only, yeah,
it's
they're
kind
only
of an
using
interesting
5, but they will allow 8 others, even though they don't use them.
So what are those? What are those?
Chile has also aromatic and non-aromatic, just like Peru does. Most of them are very similar, but Chile has Moscato de Alejandría and Moscato Rosada, which are both the same as Peru. And then for their non-aromatic, they use Pedro Jimenez, Moscatel de Austria, and Torrentel, which are still very similar to Peru, but it's kind of funny. Peru puts the Torrentel in their aromatic line, and then Chile puts it in their non-aromatic, which is kind of funny that they... And I don't know the reason for that. And also, one of the things we didn't say about fermenting is Peru ferments with the skins of the grapes still on, and Chile ferments with the skins off. So they skin the grapes and then ferment.
Chile skins the grapes?
Yep.
That sounds like an awful lot of work.
They ferment off the skins, yeah.
They ferment off the skins?
Yeah, so you pull the skin off of it.
The ferment, the process?
You know, the grape has a skin, Mike. All right.
No, I get it.
All right, we're going to get back.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
We're going to take this to grapes.
No,
grapes,
I get it. So
it's essentially like a peeled grape.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, that's a lot of work.
That's a hell of a lot of work.
That's my point. Like, right. That's a lot of effort to peel a grape. Yeah. And then imagine how many grapes you need.
I'm sure it's industrialized now rather than someone sitting there peeling off.
All I'm saying is it's a lot of work.
You're right.
So anyway.
I'll give you that.
Good golly. So, and some more fun Chile facts that can actually be distilled multiple times. Typically, it comes out at a higher proof than its Peruvian. I don't know. I was going to say its Peruvian brother, but they're not.
Yeah,
brothers.
Cain and Abel brothers. So.
Yeah, but a higher proof. And then it's typically proofed down with purified water. And aging in oak is actually okay. Kind of like a lot of brandies.
Yeah.
You can age in oak to get some of that flavor. So they're a lot more loose with what they consider a pisco, where Peru is a bit more... You know,
and with going back to what you're saying about proofing it down, Chile does distill it at a higher proof and then proofs it down. Peru actually distills at a lower proof, and what they put in the bottle is essentially their pure
cask
proof.
Strength,
yeah,
right?
It's like, sort of like cask strength. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so.
So I guess. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, go for it. I was gonna talk about some main styles of Chile.
Yeah. And then we'll wrap it up because we're getting close to the end.
All right. So while Peru had three main styles, which was the single varietal blend and then the incompletely fermented, Chile has four main styles. And like Mike was saying, they actually will age stuff in oak barrels. So their four styles is unaged, which is obviously not aged in a barrel. They have lightly aged, which is between 6 and 12 months in a barrel. They're aged, which is at least 1 year, but they normally do 2 years, just better quality, I guess. And then they're artisanal, which that means it's pisco made in the old style, which is aged at least 2 years in this Raleigh wood tanks. And Raleigh is a species of tree that is native to Chile. So it's sort of aged in their own species.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to try that. Well, fuck, I'd love to try all of it.
I've actually not had that one before, and that'd be really
cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, that one. That
it's probably
really
it's probably
good.
Really raw, like really.
Yeah, earthy and
yeah.
Yeah, so that's pisco.
That's pisco.
But so pisco is like we said originally, it's a type of brandy almost.
Grape brandy.
Yeah, but it's got some distinctions, like especially Peruvian pisco, it's, you know, not aged in wood where typically brandies are. And then unlike grappa, because it almost sounds like, okay, it's very similar to a grappa, but it's not. Grappa is distilled from the leftovers of wine or the pumice from the grape, where pisco is distilled from the juice. The grape
right.
juice. One of the master distillers of one of the largest brands in the U.S. for pisco called Pisco Portón. Jeez Louise, man. I got to get better at this. Oh, man. It grew 59% between 2012 and 2014. And the master distiller goes by the name. I love his name because there's nothing like Peruvian about it. Johnny Schuler.
That is totally a Peruvian name. Johnny Schuler.
He said... Hold on, let me get my accent back. Hey, don't be mad. Your cognac is made by oak. My pisco is made by God.
That's like, amazing.
I was like, oh, you just threw it down like
that's
like
pretty
that?
Badass.
Yeah, he's like, I don't need
oak. I'm gonna save that one for a rainy day.
Hold
like
on
that.
To that one.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't need oak to make my brain.
God
my
makes
pisco.
My pisco.
I was like, oh, it's good enough just the way it is. The other thing that's pretty remarkable about Johnny Schuler is that he won the Peruvian Congressional Medal of Honor in 2009 for work popularizing Peruvian pisco and helping recognize its cultural heritage.
That's pretty cool.
He got The Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yeah, that's pretty insane.
For Peace Corps. Hey, good's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Good for you. One of these days, you and I will get a Congressional Medal of Honor for our work on this podcast.
Any Medal of Honor would be appreciated.
Oh, man. Just a dollar.
It doesn't have to be metal. I mean,
it really doesn't.
It could be a ribbon of honor.
I got a box of chocolate chip cookies. I'll take those, man.
Hey, I'll take that.
Write the word honor on them. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. Do you have anything else?
No, I do want to say follow us on Instagram and Facebook if you like the podcast. Yeah.
If you are
Bar Curious Podcast.
We have an Instagram. We have a Facebook. And it is Bar Curious Podcast. So feel free to look those up. Give us a like and a follow. Check us out on our wacky adventure as we make our way through this wild world of bar curiosity. And if you feel so inclined and you'd like to drop us a note, you can do so at barcuriouspodcast@gmail.com. And you will get a response by either me or Joey, perhaps even both of us. At different times. And then, hey, look. Joey's got a bar. It's fantastic. It's called The Blind Barber. So check him out on Instagram and Facebook. I too have a bar called Revival 1869. And check that out on Instagram and Facebook. So look at all these things you have to do now on Instagram and Facebook.
You might need to just grab a paper and pen and write all this down.
Write it all down.
Yeah.
Bar Curious Podcast.
Bar Curious Podcast.